Unit 5, Administration, Economy, Society, Religion, Literature, Art and Architecture. Page 40, Structure, Objectives, Introduction, Mughal Administration, Revenue Reforms, Mughal Military Administration Law, Economic and Social Conditions, Religion and Literature, Art and Architecture. Let us sum up, check your progress. Objectives. In this unit, we will study the administration of Mughal dynasty, including the revenue reforms from 1526 to 1707 AD. You should be able to know central and provincial administration under the Mughals' rule in India, revenue reforms, economic and social conditions under the Mughal rule, development of literature, art and architecture. Introduction. In this unit, we discuss the Mughal system of administration and how the Mughal emperors ruled without any effective check on their authority. In theory, they were only servants of a law, the Muslim law. They could neither supersede it nor modify it. Further, we will study that the society and culture during the Mughal age was not entirely new or radically different from the culture of the preceding or succeeding ages. Also, we shall study the India's economy during the Mughal period in brackets 1526 to 1707 as in the ages before was predominantly agricultural. More than 75% of the population lived in the villages and were directly or indirectly connected with land. Further, we shall discuss in this unit that how with the advent of Mughals, Indo-Muslim architecture reaches a unity and completeness which make the story of the architectural style that developed under this august patronage particularly fascinating and instructive. The Mughal emperors were keen lovers of nature and art, and their personality was, to a certain extent, reflected in the art and culture of their times. Page 41. Mughal administration. Mughal system of administration was organized by the third Mughal emperor, Akbar, in brackets 1556 to 1605, his father and grandfather. Humayun and Babur, having had little time to introduce various administrative reforms, the Mughal system of administration centered around the sovereign whose power was unlimited. His word was law and his will none could dispute. He was the supreme authority in the state, the head of government, the supreme commander of the state force, the fountain of justice and the chief legislator. The efficient exercise of such large powers naturally imposed upon the sovereign a strenuous life which could be lived only by a physically strong and mentally alert person. But in a hereditary monarchical system, as a Mughal administration was, it was impossible to secure the succession of long lines of strong kings. And it was mainly on this rock the Mughal administration was cracked after a succession of six generations of strong kings. The Mughal emperor had no doubt a number of ministers, of whom four more important were the Diwan in charge of revenue and finance, the Mir Bakshi at the head of military department, the Mir Saman in charge of factories and stores, and Sadr-us-Sadr, the head of ecclesiastical and judicial department. Beside these four ministers, there were many other chief officers of the state who practically enjoyed the rank of ministers. But they never formed a cabinet and were entirely responsible to the sovereign who appointed them and dismissed them at his pleasure, nor did the administrative machinery of the Mughals provided for any institution which could legally and peacefully convey to the Mughal emperor the feeling of people, Muslims as well as Hindus. The Mughal administrative system thus lacked any corrective institution as was provided by the parliament for the contemporary Tudor and Stuart sovereigns of England. Lacking thus in any corrective institution, the working of the Mughal administrative machinery depended on the will of the sovereigns as long as they were strong-minded persons. And later on, when the crown became weak, a plaything at the hands of ambitious and unscrupulous ministers who made the unmade the emperors of their pleasure. The Mughal administrative system was bureaucratic without any separation between the civil and military department. All superior officers were classified into 33 grades as mansabdars, from those of 10 to those of 10,000. Every one of them held civil and military powers and functions and was to be paid a salary in cash, which in later times came to be paid either in a form of an assignment on the revenue of a district or of a jagir or land grant. The Mansabdari system formed the foundation of the Mughal administration and regulated the pay and status of its officers. Thus, the Mughal central administrative system, which was military in character and carried on by foreigners, never promoted any popular institutions and could therefore hardly count on the popular support of the children of the soil. Provincial system of administration. The Mughal evolved a provincial system of administration which marked an improvement on the system previously maintained by the Delhi Sultanate. Page 42. Akbar divided his empire into 15 subahs or provinces, the number rising with the expansion of the empire to 17 in the reign of Jahangir and to 21 during Aurangzeb's rule. Every subah was again divided into number of sarkars, in bracket corresponding to the district under the British system. And each sarkar was subdivided into a number of paragons or unions of several villages. The Mughal provincial system of administration was a replica of a central government with one important difference. The headship in provincial administration was practically divided between the governors called the Nazim or Sipesalars or Subedar, who was the executive head of the administration province. Each one of them was appointed by the emperor and was responsible to him alone. Thus, each acted as a check on the other and made provincial rebellion difficult. Besides the Diwan, the Subedar was helped also by the Bakshi or paymaster of the forces and the Qazi and the Sadar, who helped in dispensation of justice. Over every Sarkar, there was a Faujdar who was to maintain peace and order within his area and was in charge of criminal justice and police and of a local military force. In every important city, there was one executive officer called Kotwal. In every province, the central government also maintained a number of news reporters, publicly as also secretly, whose duty was to report to the center all that happened in the states. These reports were placed before the emperor. This arrangement was a further check on the rebellious tendencies of provincial governors. Next, revenue reforms. The main source of the income of the Mughal Empire was the land revenue, the other sources being customs, mintage, spoils of war, and indemnities, presents, monopolies, and poll tax. The land revenue was fixed at 1/3 of the gross produce, and collection was made by paid officials appointed by the state directly from the ryot. The land was divided into four classes according to fertility, and elaborate measures were taken to find out the correct amount of production. The payment could be made both in kind and cash, though payment in cash was carefully determined on the basis of prices prevailing during the previous 3 or 10 years. A uniform system was not, however, prevalent all over the empire. In some parts like Lower Sindh and Kashmir, the state's share was divided by an actual division of the standing crop. In other and larger part, from Multan to Bihar, prevailed the more elaborate system based on the survey and measurement of land according to a uniform standard, classification according to fertility of soil, settlement of the average produced, and the fixation of cash value of its 1/3. In Bengal, again the state share was fixed on estimate of the gross produce based on the reports prepared by revenue officers called Tunangos. Mughal military administration, law and justice. The Mughal army consisted of cavalry, infantry, artillery and navy. The cavalry was most important of the four branches. The infantry, composed mainly of townsmen and peasantry recruited for occasion, was rather insignificant. Page 43. The artillery was equipped with guns either manufactured in India or imported from outside. The Mughal artillery, though superior to any that the contemporary Hindu states possessed, was inferior in range and precision to that possessed by the Europeans. The Mughal navy mainly consisted of boats, small and large, for guarding river. It was no good for sailing on the high seas. As a matter of fact, the Mughals, not excluding Akbar and Aurangzeb, never appreciated the importance of the sea as a high road of commerce as well as of invasion, and never built a navy which could fight with the European on the high seas and prevent them from landing on the soil of India. They preferred to rely on the support of one European race of people against another, and thus suffered themselves to be their victims. Again, Masabdari system under which the Mughal army was organized led to false mustard and absence of any regular training and discipline. Further, the Mughal army on its march and even on the battlefield was attended with so much pomp and display and such heavy equipage that even in time of Aurangzeb, it ceased to be an effective fighting machinery against the nimble and fast-moving, lightly equipped Maratha army. Law and justice. The emperor was the highest judiciary authority in the empire and used to dispense justice in an open court on evening of every Friday. Original cases were put up in the court of the emperor, but appeal could also be made to the lower courts. All Mughal emperors tried to just, but except Akbar, all were biased against the majority of his subjects, that is the Hindus. Next to the emperor was the court of chief Khazi in the capital. Khazi were appointed in all provincial capitals, cities and even Paragnas. The court of Qazis mostly decided cases concerning property and religious affairs. Sometimes Muftis, in bracket, people who interpreted Islamic laws, were appointed to assist the Qazis. Besides, Subedar, Faujdar, Shikhdars, Kotwals, etc. decided criminal cases, and Diwan, Amal Gujar, Amil, etc. decided revenue cases. Akbar had appointed Hindu Pandits as well to decide cases of the Hindus. The village Panchayats decided cases in their respective villages. Thus, there were different types of courts during the period of the rule of Mughals, but the area of their jurisdiction and their relation with each other were neither clear nor definite. The theory of punishment of Mughals was severe. Generally, the principle which was followed was tooth for tooth and an eye for an eye. Death penalty, mutilation of limbs, flogging, confiscation of property, fines were usual punishments awarded to guilty ones. Economic reforms and social conditions. Under that, economic reforms. India remained prosperous till the reign of Shah Jahan. The security and stability which Akbar provided to the Mughal Empire brought about fruitful results, and prosperity of India reached its highest peak during the reign of Shah Jahan. The emperor, the nobles, traders and industrialists, of course, enjoyed maximum shares of their prosperity, yet the common people were not devoid of daily necessities of life, as all articles were cheaply available. Page 44. The emperor was the highest beneficiary. He not only collected many taxes, but was also the best trader and industrialist. He maintained many industries, in bracket, kharkhonas, also the best trader and industrialist, which produced a large variety of articles, which were sold in the market and constitute a good source of his income. He therefore led a most luxurious life. Next to him were his Mansabdars and Rajput kings. They enjoyed extensive jagirs besides heavy salaries from the state. They enjoyed the best of their lives till they could afford it. Below them were the members of the bureaucracy. Most of them were also placed. Among them, only petty civil servants and slaves were the least beneficiaries. The traders and industrialists were divided into several categories. Several among them were very rich. Thus, during the rule of the Mughals, the economic structure of the Indian society was feudal, in which the people were divided into different upper and lower categories. In such a society, the people of upper strata were the only beneficiaries, while the common people toiled and remained mostly on existence level. The profession of majority of the people was agriculture. More than 75% of the population lived in villages and were directly or indirectly connected with land. Wheat, barley, gram, maize, rice, millets, linseeds, pulses, sugarcane, jutes, poppy, indigo, fruits, vegetables, etc. were produced in different parts of the country. The most famous and the largest industry of India was cloth industry. India produced a large quantity and also that of different variety of cotton, silk and woolen cloth. Carpets and shawls of good quality were also produced in India. Agra, Fatehpur Sikri, Multan, Alwar, Jaunpur, etc. were famous for manufacturing carpets. Trade flourished during the Mughal rule. The Mughal emperors provided peace and security to their extensive empire. They also constructed good roads and sarais, which helped in convenience transport and traveling. This helped in growth trade, except during the period of rule of the later Mughals, who failed to provide peace to the empire. Thus, it can be fairly concluded that India was economically prosperous during the Mughal rule. That is why when Nader Shah and Ahmad Shah Abdali attacked India, they got everything in abundance in plunder. Currency system. Babur and Humayun brought about no changes in the prevalent currency system except that they issued coins in their own names. Akbar brought about changes in this system. He issued coins of gold, silver and copper of different weights and denominations and fixed their ratio with each other. All these coins were of standard weight and metal. Most of them were rectangular. Akbar did not inscribe his figure on coins. Instead, the name of the emperor, the name of the mint, the year of issue, and in certain cases, references from the Quran were inscribed on them. Jahangir inscribed his figure on certain coins, and on certain other coins inscribed his name as well as the name of Nur Jahan. Aurangzeb increased the value of the rupee, but it was a major change. No change was brought about by the later Mughals in the currency system. Page 45. Social conditions. The society and culture during the Mughal rule was not entirely new or radically different from the culture of the preceding or succeeding ages. The Indian culture in all the ages has been fundamentally the same, and the differences we notice at different times are, generally speaking, those of detail and not of the essence. So, an attempt has been made to describe under a few major heads. Dress. The royal family and the nobility spent a lot of their incomes on dresses, which consisted of a large coat, tight trousers, a turban or a cap, and a silk series tied at a waist with the ends hanging down. The common people could not afford to put on expensive dresses. The dress which was the most common among the people was the dhoti. Sometimes the Muslims used a pajama and a kurta. Most of the people were virtually half naked. The use of ornaments was practically universal. Food. There was no uniformity in India with regard to food habits. While the Hindus were mostly vegetarians, the Muslims were generally non-vegetarians. Milk was a very important part of a diet of the people in the villages. Women. Women occupied a high position in the family. They commanded respect. Most of them led a life of dignity and respect. Polygamy was very common among the Muslims. In some cases, the Hindus also married many wives. Talaq or divorce and remarriages were common among the Muslims. There was no talaq and widow remarriage among the Hindus. Sati was a common among the Hindus. Toilets, hair dyes, recipe for the cure of baldness, and the removal of hair from the body were known from ancient times and practiced in medieval age. Soaps, powder and creams had their substitutes in ghusl, myrobalanas, opanthana and pounded sandalwood. Soap was known and used in India from ancient times. Precious scents of diverse kinds were in use. The Ain I Akbari gives a long list of scents and their prices. Nur Jahan's mother prepared a new itar from roses and named it Itar-e-Jahangiri. Ladies were found of jewels made of gold and silver. Collyrium was used for the eyes. Ladies frequently used mehndi to give red color to their hand and feet. They reddened their lips by chewing betel leaves, which served them as a lipstick. Customs. Custom also played in important rites observed by the Hindus, where Chatti, Mundan, Chalavan, Vidyamba, Viva and Shrudra. The Muslim also observed their own rites of Akhika, Bismillah, marriage and Chalam. Fair and festival. Both the communities, Hindus and Muslims, had a large number of festivals which they celebrated with great enthusiasm during medieval times. Page 46. The enlightened rulers like Akbar and Jahangir adopted some of the Hindu festivals and gave them a place in their calendar. Akbar went further and associated Holi, Dasera and Vasant Panchami with court celebrations. Aurangzeb followed a reverse course. Holi, one of the ancient festival of Hindus, was the most popular day of rejoicing, music and feast as it is today. Akbar observed the festival of Raksha Bandhan and had a Rakhi tied on his wrist. Diwali was observed in much the same manner as it is today. Shivratri, or the festival of Lord Shiva, was observed with all solemnity during Mughal times. Ram Navami and Janmashtami were the two other important Hindu festivals referred to by Abul Fazl in the Ayn-i Akbari. Muharram, Eid Milad, Shab-e-Barat, Eid-ul-Fitr and Eid-ul-Zuha are some of the important Muslim festivals which were observed with all solemnity during Mughal times. Amusement. Chess, Chaupar and playing cards were the most popular indoor games and were enjoyed by the rich and the poor alike. Of the outdoor diversions, hunting, animal fighting and chugan were the privilege of a few, while ishakbazi, wrestling etc. were enjoyed by one and all. It is regrettable that no reference to kabaddi is traceable in contemporary records. Akbar was very fond of boxing and kept a large number of Persian and Turan boxers at the court. Martial sports like archery and swordsmanship had a special fascination for the people. Matches and contests were held and rewards offered. Animal fight was one of the popular amusements and recreation of the age. Next, religion and literature. Practically all religious communities existed in India at that time. The Hindus, the Christians, the Buddhists, the Jains, the Paris and the Sikhs were prominent religious communities among them. The Hindus constituted the majority among the population of India. Among the Muslims, the Shia, the Sunni, the Bohras, the Khojas and the Sufis were prominent sects. The Sufi sect had become known to Indians even prior to coming of the Turks to India. The Sufis emphasized on bhakti and love to God. Another important feature of the religious life during the rule of Mughals was the growing spirit of religious toleration. Both among the Hindu and the Muslim realized the necessity of living in harmony with each other after conflict of centuries. Thus, the necessity of bringing about improvement in religion, harmonious relations between different communities and moral awakening remained as before during the period of rule of Mughals also. Literature during the reign of Mughals. The Mughal period was productive of great literature. The literature was in Persian and Hindi. As regards Persian literature, Babur himself was a great scholar and knew thoroughly Arabic, Persian and Turki. He not only liked the writing of other, but himself contributed to the same. He wrote his memories in the Turkish language. There is no hypocrisy in his writing. Page 47. Babur has been described as the prince of autobiographers. According to Elphinstone, Babur's memories were almost the only piece of real history in Asia. His son Humayun collected a large number of poets, philosophers and divine and looked delight in their company. He was so much fond of books that wherever he went, he took a library of books with him. Persian literature made great headway in the time of Akbar. Some of the writings of this period have historical importance and the others literary importance. The important historical work of this period were Tariq-i-Alfi of Mulla Daur, the Ayn-i-Akbari and Akbar-nama of Abdul Fazl, the Masir-i-Rahimi of Abdul Baqi, the Tabakat-i-Akbari of Nizamuddin Ahmad, the Muntakab-ul-Tawarikh of Baduni and Akbar-nama of Faizi. Humayun was also a well-reader, scholar who adorned his court with poets, philosophers and divines. He was interested in geography and astronomy and so fond of books. Jauhar, the celebrated author of Tuskartal-ul-Waqiat, was under his service. There was a great development of literature during the time of Akbar. The imperial patronage was freely extended to Persian and Hindi literature. By the emperor's order, many Sanskrit works were translated into Persian. Abdul Khadir Badauni, an orthodox mullah, was employed to translate Valmiki's Ramayana into Persian and also a proportion of Mahabharat. Haji Ibrahim Sirhindi translated Vatharva Veda. The bulk Mahabharata was renamed Razman Maha by Naqib Khan. Faizi translated Leelavati, a work on arithmetic. Among the poets, the name of Ghazali comes first, who became the poet laureate. Faizi was also a great poet whose knowledge of Arabic and medicine was surprisingly rich. He wrote many books. the most famous of which is Masnavi. Jahangir was also a good scholar. He had a good knowledge of Persian. His autobiography ranks second to that of Babur in frankness, sincerity, Frenchness and charm. Among the learned men of his reign were Mirza Ghiyas Beg, Naqib Khan, Mutammat Khan, Niamatullah, Abdul Agha Dehlavi and others. Many historical works were composed during this period, the most important of which are Iqbal Nama I Jahangir, The Masir Jahangir and the Zubadat ul Tawarikh. The letters written by emperors and nobles also occupy important place in the Persian literature of that time. Among them, Munir, Raja Jai Singh, Afzal Khan, Sadaullah Khan have been regarded of good literary value. Jahanara, daughter of Shah Jahan, and Zaybun Nisa, daughter of Aurangzeb, were also poetess. By the time Mughal rule established in India, Hindi had developed as a literary language, but it received no encouragement from Babur Humayun and Sher Shah, yet many good books were written by individuals' efforts. Among them, the Padmavata and the Yugavata have been regarded works of repute. Akbar extended his patronage to Hindi, which helped in its growth. The most famous scholars of Hindi at that time were Tulsidas and Surdas. Tulsidas wrote nearly 25 texts, the best among them being Ramacharitamanas and the Vinaya Patrika. Surdas lived at Agra and he had no connection with the court of emperor. He was blind, yet he composed 102 poems which have been compiled under the title Sur Sagar. Page 48. Mirabai also composed love poems during this very period and her poems also occupy a prominent place in Hindi literature. Thus, the period of the rule of Akbar was certainly the golden period of Hindi literature. In addition to Persian and Hindi literature, their other languages were also developed. Among them, Urdu, Bengali, Gujarati and Marathi. Thus, literature of practically all languages progressed during the Mughal rule except that Turki and Arabic. Art and architecture. The Mughal contribution in the field of art and architecture is described as a happy blend of Byzantine and Indian style. A new style emerged in this period as a result of mixture of Muslim and Indian styles. The mausoleum of Sher Shah at Sarasam is a remarkable structure with a harmonious combination of Hindu and Muslim architectural ideas. Akbar was a builder and his buildings reflect his spirit of toleration. The most famous buildings of Akbar was Humayun's tomb at Delhi, fortress, palaces at Agra and Lahore, and the most magnificent city of Fatehpur Sikri. The place and fortress at Agra contains Rajput influence. Akbar built a beautiful city at Fatehpur Sikri near Agra. The most impressive building here is the Buland Darwaza, which was built by Akbar to commemorate his conquest of Gujarat. The Jodhabai's palace is the best example of Hindu influence on Mughal architecture. Many other buildings reveal characteristics of Jaina and Hindu temples. The Panch Mahal resembles a Buddhist Vihara. The mausoleum of Nur Jahan's father, built in Jahangir's reign, is the first Mughal structure built completely in marble. Shah Jahan was undoubtedly the greatest builder among the Mughal rulers. The most important building of his reign were Diwan-e-Aam and Diwan-e-Khas in the fort of Delhi, the Jama Masjid, the Moti Masjid and the Taj Mahal. Mughal architecture reached the zenith in this period. Shah Jahan built his structures in marbles and began to popularize inlay work using precious stones. In the Agra fort, his marble buildings, Diwan-e-Aam, Diwan-e-Khas, the Sheesh Mahal, the Moti Masjid are splendid edifices. His buildings at Red Fort in Delhi are equally famous and Shah Jahan claimed that the royal residence was a paradise on earth. Jama Masjid, built by him in Delhi, is a very impressive and majestic mosque. The Taj Mahal, built by him in memory of his wife Mumtaz Mahal, is considered the finest flower of Mughal art. A combination of finest art and the most expert construction built at the cost of 3 crores over a period of 22 years. The Taj is described as the finest monument of conjugal love and fidelity in the world. According to Ferguson, Perhaps in the whole world there is not a scene where nature and art so successfully combine to produce a perfect work of art as within the precinct of this far-famed mausoleum. It exhibits the highest artistic merit, extraordinary scientific thought and remarkable technical skill, splendid layout and most sensuous charm. Percy Brown considered that it marks the perfect moment in the evolution of architecture during the Mughal age. Page 49. Mughal architecture declined after the death of Shah Jahan. Though some buildings were built during the reign of Aurangzeb, they were inferior in design and artistic merit. In South India, however, a new style was emerging. The mausoleum of Ibrahim II is described as the last word in magnificent ornamentation. The domes of these buildings, complete with the Mughal buildings, with fine internal ornamentation. The Golgumbaz, the mausoleum of Muhammad Adil Shah, is a very impressive structure containing the biggest dome in India. It looks majestic and graceful. Painting in the Mughal age. Painting also flourished in the Mughal age. The Mughal painting was a happy mingling of foreign and Indian elements. The Persian style entered into Indian style during this period and mixed with the local styles. Humayun brought with him two painters illustrated the work, Dastan-e-Amil, Alamzah. There was remarkable progress in painting in the reign of Akbar. He invited painters from different parts of the country and even awarded prize for good paintings. There were more than 100 painters in his court. The walls of the buildings in the new capital, Fatehpur Sikri, were decorated by beautiful paintings. Abdus Samad, famous foreign painter in his court, Jahangir was also interested in painting and continued the tradition of his father. Mughal painting reached its zenith during the reign of Jahangir. The paintings of this period were delightfully fresh and natural. Among the most beautiful paintings are the natural scenes, particularly hunting scenes. Ustad Mansur, Farooq Beg, Muhammad Nadir and Muhammad Murad were the most famous painters of Jahangir's time. During the reign of Shah Jahan itself, there was a marked deterioration in the standard of painting. Calligraphy, which was closely associated with painting, also developed during the Mughal age. Music under the Mughals. The Mughal period also witnessed the development in music. There were eminent musicians in the reign of Akbar. Tansen, who hailed from Bundelkhand, was at the court of Akbar. He was a great singer as well as a composer of music. He classified many ragas into Hindustani music and reduced them to 12. He also invented a new instrument, Rabbad. Baba Ramdev, Biju Bawra and Surdas were other famous musicians of this time. Jahangir and Shah Jahan were also patrons of music. Jahangir was himself the author of many Hindi songs. There were many musicians like Ramadas and Mahapatra in the court of Shah Jahan. He honored the musician Jagannath by weighing him against gold, gave him a title. During the reign of Aurangzeb, music also declined. Even the Rajputs and many Sikh kings encouraged music. Man Singh Tanwar, the king of Gwalior, was not only a patron of music but was also a composer of new style. As music became popular, a number of works were also produced on that subject. Pundarike Vitala, scholar in Carnatic music, was in the court of Akbar, wrote two books, Rangamanajari and Rangamala. Bhava Bhatt wrote Anupavilas and Anuparatnakara. Damodara Mishra was the author of Sangeeta Darpan. Ahobhatta was the author of Sangeeta Parijatha. Page 50. Dance during the time of Mughals. Dance also progressed along with music during the period of Mughals. In fact, music and dance are so closely linked with each other that one cannot exist without the other. Therefore, if one progresses, the other is bound to progress. The Mughal emperors, therefore, provided equal patronage to dance. All Mughal emperors except Aurangzeb, provincial governors, other rulers and Rajput kings patronized both music and dance and therefore both progressed. Other arts, Akbar, Jahangir and Shah Jahan extended their patronage sculpture as well, though very small idols, particularly of ivory, could be prepared and jewelry also made good progress. The Mughal emperors took keen interest in gardening. Babur developed a garden named Noor Afsan at Agra. It is now called Rambagh. The Shalimar Garden in Kashmir was developed by Jahangir, while the Shalimar Garden at Lahore was developed by Shah Jahan. Aurangzeb planted no garden, but many other gardens were planted granted by nobles and provincial rulers during this period. Thus, there was all-round progress during the period of rule of Mughals. It continued till the empire remained powerful. Let us sum up. In this unit, you will study about the Mughal Empire in India is one of the greatest and the most brilliant empire known to history. Its first six rulers were men of exceptional ability and extraordinary vigor and common sense. They ruled the country with the spirit of benevolent despotism. They gave the country political unity, administrative stability, and enlightened rule, which were conspicuous by their absence for quite a long time. The Mughal government in India was civil and secular. It was as much Islamic as Indian and Mughal. Further, you learnt in this unit that the social, economic and cultural developments of India under the great Mughals. Two countries of Mughal rule deeply influenced the Indian way of style. Stability, peace, strong and benevolent rule, a rich heritage of culture and patronage of the rulers created exactly those conditions that led to a brilliant revival of literature and fine arts. Check your progress. Roman number 1. Read the following statement and mark right or wrong. A. The Mughal administrative system was bureaucratic. B. The land revenue was fixed at 1/3 of the gross produced. C. The Mausoleum of Sher Shah was built in Kashmir. D. Babur built Buland Darwaza at Fatehpur Sikri. E. Akbar disliked music and painting. Page 51. Roman number 2. Write 3 lines on the following. A. Mansabdar. B. Raja Todarmal. C. Gulabdan Begum. Roman number 3. Write 5 lines on Fatehpur Sikri. With this, we have come to the end of this book. Any suggestions for improving the quality of recording is always welcome. Please contact Mitra Jyoti. The address is given at the beginning of the book. Mitra Jyoti family wishes you every success in all of your life's undertakings. This is Nasira. Hope you have enjoyed this book and benefited from its listening. Thank you.